League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Davis Maddock, joined by Pat Corain, and we actually have a topic today instead of just being like, yeah, you know, what have you been drafting? What have you been doing? We are going to go through the, I guess, uncertain backfields is the best way to phrase it, where the market is saying we don't really know who the winner is here. Training camps should get started in about a month. So this is the part of the offseason where people have declared drafting dead. Like, you shouldn't be drafting right now if you're taking the barbell approach, which means the rooms are probably pretty sharp, which means we got to beat them on player takes.
Well, so yeah, I'm actually uncertain, to use the theme of this episode, of if this is still the early window or not. I think I saw Bimefor responding on Twitter that he still considers it the early window. I'm still drafting right now, partly because I just can't stop drafting, but you know, we don't have the ADPs that are like quite as soft as we were right when these contests opened and everything. But at the same time, we're not like reacting to, you know, kind of incomplete training camp information. So
right.
I still feel like maybe it's kind of the late early window in terms of the barbell approach. Like, I don't want to be drafting like after the first preseason game. Like, at that point, it's like, I might as well just wait.
You want to wait for information. Want to wait for the injuries. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause what if we really had, you know, in terms of like, I guess the Brown stuff has been the big mover. We've seen Watson really fall. We've seen Cooper really fall. I guess that's, I don't know, that feels like about it. Like, I guess DeAndre Hopkins suspension was after Best Ball Mania 3 had started, but it doesn't feel like there are huge news items. Like, it doesn't feel like we have a Daryl Henderson from last year, Tyreek Hill, the first time they ran Best Ball Mania, he was suspended or thought he was going to be suspended or whatever. Yeah. So we don't really have that yet.
No, we don't. Yeah. So that's why I kind of feel like, you know, like Fuller and Julio haven't signed. Like, until Julio's on a team, I feel like the early window's not over. And so therefore the early window might not be over until October.
Where's Julio going to sign?
I don't know. I mean, Green Bay seems like a good fit, you know.
Good fit, Packers.
Yeah, maybe we just need Christian Watson to drop a few more balls, and we get Julio in Green Bay.
I've not really been taking Christian Watson at all. Him and Robbie Dubs feel like the exact same range of outcomes for this upcoming season.
I wouldn't say the exact same range of outcomes, because like Dubs is a guy that we have seen that archetype end up on the practice squad.
Yeah. Cornell Powell, anybody?
Yeah. It wouldn't be surprising if he genuinely was on the practice squad. I think he'll make the team. I was looking at The Athletic today. They're doing a 53-man roster projection, and they did have him making the 53, and they said that, you know, they think that they want their fourth-round pick to make the roster and everything. But yeah, I think, you know, the downside for Dubs definitely higher, but yeah, I mean, it also wouldn't shock me if he kind of like has an MVS role, or they're kind of in a split for that MVS role. Dubs was pretty productive.
Yeah, he was. So uncertain backfields. Let's not do the Chiefs one yet. I think we've done enough. We've all said our piece on the Chiefs one. We both like Rojo. I like Clyde Edwards-Helaire at his new price. You can sometimes get him in the late eighth round, early ninth round. It's fine. We don't need to do any more on it than that.
I think that CH has some more falling to do. So
you could be right, but also he's going to get the first carry in the first preseason game, and then he's going to go back up.
Interesting. All right. If this is the dip on CH, maybe I'll have to jump in and get some.
I mean, I don't know, you know, he could get hurt. Like they're like all like whatever, but I mean, Rojo and McKinnon are the attractive priced ones right now. I had a great draft going last night, and I was on the turns. You know, sometimes when you're on the turn, you zone out, and I missed a pick and I auto drafted McKinnon at like 135 or something like that. Hate it. You hate to
still
see
fine.
It. Still fine. Yeah. So I think the spot that could give us the James Conner, my vote for this year's James Conner / Leonard Fournette award is the Patriots backfield between Damian Harris, Ramondre Stevenson, and, you know, these nine other guys. They got Ty Montgomery there. James White is coming back from his hip injury. Kevin Harris, Pierre Strong. My take is one of those two rookie running backs is stone cold, not making the team, either cut or practice squatted.
His name is Kevin Harris.
Sure. And then the other one is going to do the Damian Harris and just be redshirted, right? Because they still have J.J. Taylor there. They're going to eventually want James White to be activated. It seems like James White is not 100% good to go from this hip injury. Seems like he might be a candidate for the PUP. So my answer is Damian Harris is fine in half point PPR where he goes on underdog, but I am absolutely smashing the button on Ramondre Stevenson, because if James White is not ready to go, we're looking at a potential three down role in what should be an offense that wants to use their running backs a lot, because they just don't trust Mac Jones to go outside of structure.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was listening to 4 for 4 has been having these beat writer interviews. Mike Randall hosts them. They're quite good. I recommend them. And the Patriots guy was on and was saying a few interesting things. One, he was like, to your point about the guys getting redshirted, they're like, they asked their running backs to do a lot. Like in terms of, you know, picking up pass protection and everything, like they're putting a lot on the running back's plate. It, you know, helps explain why Harris was redshirted, makes it harder for a guy like Stevenson to break out as a rookie. But he was saying he thinks Stevenson is really the guy who could emerge from this backfield and really kind of break out in a big way. At the same time, like you have to keep your expectations in check for this backfield to some degree, because I think it's going to be a committee. No matter what Gretch was mentioning last night, like
it's definitely going to be a committee. 100%. Damian Harris, if healthy, will not go away. If James White is healthier than I think he is, he's not going away. We'll probably see some JJ Taylor or some Pierre Strong or whatever. But I also the pie.
Well, Ty Montgomery's the guy that
right
that Gretch brought up last night, which I had not even realized was there. But Ty Montgomery signed and basically on a deal where he's probably making the team, just pulling up on SpotTrack here, the out that they list is after the year. So it looks like he got enough guaranteed money where he's probably making the team as like a special teams contributor. And then maybe he's taking on that James White role if White's not healthy. So it's like, even if Harris got hurt and White didn't make the team, you're still probably looking at Ramondre splitting with like a Ty Montgomery, kind of like the Brandon Bolden thing. Like they'll find a guy to have the split up with it.
Sure. But Brandon Bolden was playing last year anyways, while with Ramondre, and Ramondre was still that, I believe, wasn't there a game where Damian Harris had 100 yards and a touchdown, Ramondre had 100 yards and a touchdown, and Brandon Bolden scored? I think it was against the Browns.
They smashed the Browns. They were at home. They just demolished them.
So my thing is Ramondre kind of profiles like a Antonio Gibson type, maybe.
I like that.
But he's 50 picks cheaper than Josh Jacobs, AJ Dillon, and Antonio Gibson. And their medians are better than him, but I think their ceilings are fairly similar.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I like kind of a Josh Jacobs type as well. You know, I think if you're taking one of those guys where they're going, like, just wait and take Ramondre.
Yeah. I mean, I will do the Josh Jacobs, Antonio Gibson, AJ Dillon, CH, Cordarrelle Patterson tier of guys in like zero RB builds. Like if I have not taken a running back until the fifth round or something, then I'll take them. But when you already have a round one running back, Saquon, Fournette, James Conner, whatever, I'm not interested in that grouping of guys at all, because those teams need 13.5 points per game, way less.
Yeah, and I'm almost never taking those guys except Patterson, who tends to fall. Like, I would say like one out of every 10 drafts, Patterson's available at like pick 105. I was like, okay, I'll take him here.
Right. So that's my answer. I like I said, I think like round nine, Damian Harris is fine. I have no issue with that. He has absolutely no pass catching ceiling. Like, he's got one game in his career with more than three targets. He just is not going to be used in that role at all. And they like to your point, they don't trust rookie running backs at all. You know, that's just kind of their deal. And Ramondre last season, you know, was a fine receiver when targeted. He was not targeted a ton, but yeah, it was that game against Cleveland Browns where he had 100 yards and two touchdowns and five targets in that game.
Ramondre also came in with really strong yards per out run and looked like a guy that would be kind of one of these bigger receiving backs. Like, he, you know, that's kind of his, what he profiled as. So, you know, it's exciting to see him getting used as a receiver last year and maybe the opportunity opening up. Like, not your typical kind of James White little scat back type, but I mean, right. Ramondre kind of is a receiving back.
Kind of like a actually a really souped up version of the role Rex Burkhead played for them the last Brady year, where he was like the goal line guy and split third downs with James White, but was also getting some rushing work as well. Like, what? I mean, he was a fourth round pick one season, Rex Burkhead was.
Yeah, I like that comp a lot. You know, in terms of the role, I think that makes a lot of sense. I've been kind of thinking about Ramondre as like LeGarrette Blount, who catches passes.
Sure. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, I get that. So that's my vote. Ramondre is kind of like, you know, when you go on these shows and they ask you, like, you know, who is your vote to be like the league winner type guy? Like, Ramondre has been the guy that I've kind of consistently been going to because he's so cheap that he doesn't have to like uber smash. Like, he doesn't even have to do what Fournette and Connor do last year. Like, 950 yards, but like 11 touchdowns could, especially in the half point PPR, be super good. And the pie for running back production on the Patriots should be one of the highest in the league. Like, team percentage of fantasy points scored should be so high for their running backs.
Yeah. So apparently, so I was listening, again, this is on, Randall's podcast where they were talking about who the offensive coordinator would be. And so he was saying, he thinks it's going to be, I can't remember the name of the beat writer. It might've been Mike Reese. But he was saying, he thinks it's, Bill Belichick basically wanting to just kind of coach this for as long as he can, you know, coach the offense. And then he thinks that it will be Matt Patricia as the offensive coordinator for this team. Ugh. But then Matt Patricia might be up in the booth during the game, leaving Joe Judge as kind of the hands-on, like, sideline offensive coordinator. It's like the grossest thing I've ever heard. I mean, this is bad enough, right? Like, two failed kind of like not particularly sharp coaches on the defensive side of the ball coming in to kind of, it feels like, prove a point for Belichick that like he doesn't need an offensive coordinator. Like, this whole thing just seems like an ego trip for Belichick. Like, this does have like kind of not quite to the same extent, but some like Urban Meyer-y, like, this is seems like could be like catastrophic from a coaching perspective.
Yes.
So I am trying to just keep that in the back of my mind with all this Patriot stuff, because I like Mac Jones. I think he profiles as like a very strong pocket passer. You know, potentially takes a leap this year. Like, if they had an OC, I would really like this team, but they don't. They have like negative OCs.
Right. Okay. So let's move on to, I think the Jets feel a little unsettled. Like, I think the market has really decided that it's Brees, but would it be super, super surprising to us if we had Michael Carter as the top guy?
So I kind of did a like a little check-in with myself last night, actually, as I was looking at Michael Carter coming around in one of these best ball manias I was doing. And that check-in was that, like, prior to them signing or drafting Brees, I was pretty high on Michael Carter. I thought he had a really strong rookie season. And then I was like, but okay, but I'm not drafting any of Michael Carter really now, because I like Breece so much as a prospect. I think he's really undervalued in where he's going in redraft. But yeah, I kind of feel like it's not, I would say, an uncertain backfield, but I think it could be more of a committee than we would like it to be. Or I would like it to be kind of being more with my bets on Breece than on Carter. But I don't know. I mean, Carter was good and he catches passes. One thing I did, so I ended up taking Carter in this draft and I paired him with Zach Wilson with the idea of like, if Zach Wilson's going to take a step forward, he kind of needs to like blend in a little bit of Mike White into his game, like take the check down, take the easy throw. So maybe like that step forward for Wilson actually, rather than, you know, him hitting big plays downfield is actually more like,
yeah, keeping the offense on schedule.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think I'm going to be taking more Michael Carter going forward. Just, you know, kind of all around pretty strong year, contingent value. It's not a fun click because Breece isn't going anywhere, but you never know.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously like Breece, but it does feel like Michael Carter is going in a range where, I mean, honestly, even if there was an injury ahead of him, right? Like he's going after Alexander Mattison, going after Damian Pierce, Ronald Jones. Wow, he's going even later. He's going after like Spiller, who I'm not really that interested in. Like right ahead of Tyler Allgeier. I mean, that it's like he is probably not a premium handcuff in terms of the offense, but premium handcuff in terms of his usage if Breece were to get injured. Like is Ty Johnson still on the roster? I don't even know.
I think he is. I think Coleman's still on the roster even. Wow. So we'll see how long that lasts.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean that one, I guess that is just more of an uncertain handcuff situation. I do think Breece probably starts while healthy, the majority of the games, like, I don't know, 70% of the time this season plays out or something like that.
Yeah. But, you know, Connor Hughes, beat writer for The Athletic, he wrote that he thinks that LaFleur is philosophically committed to a committee. And, you know, so maybe it's kind of like DeAndre Swift, Jamal Williams type of situation.
Where, yes.
You know, it's like, and in that case, like Carter's kind of the worst Swift, you know, where he's like more of the pass catcher. And maybe Breece is like, I guess probably not a great comp. Maybe it's like an AJ Dillon, Aaron Jones type of deal. Just with a much, much worse offense.
Right.
And Carter's not as good as Jones.
Yeah. Okay. The Seahawks, Kenneth Walker, Rashad Penny. We did get an NBC Sports Edge blurb this last week about Penny, you know, sort of being in the driver's seat. And I mean, I suppose it is not nearly as attractive as a backfield as it's been in years past, although much more attractive if these reports that they are going to acquire Baker Mayfield for a third round pick and a fifth round pick are true. Baker Mayfield is much better than Drew Lock and much better than Geno Smith. Not going to be as good as the Russell Wilson offense, but certainly similar to the backfield where Rashad Penny just like won you your fantasy playoffs last year, you know?
Yeah, this one's tough because, you know, like, so I was looking at PFF's offensive line rankings, which just came out. And those are always nice because you're like, am I missing, you know, is there something, you know, I don't know the offensive lines nearly as well as I know the skill players. So, you know, you're already worried about Seattle. You scroll, you get all the way down to 32 in the offensive line rankings here. That's where the Seattle Seahawks are. So, I mean, like on top of everything else, they have the lowest ranked offensive line. Like, I don't know if Baker's going to be enough. I've drafted a lot of Penny because he's like several rounds cheaper than Walker. And he was so good last year that, you know, I don't know. He doesn't need to be consistent. He's a guy who rips off big plays. So, you know, just like a bet on talent, I think he's appealing at the price. But I don't know if he's going to jump up now because people are viewing him as the starter. That might.
What do we think about his ability to catch passes? Because when he was, you know, ripping off all those great games last year, it was not as a pass catcher. Like in that crazy time frame of all those 100-yard games, I think he only caught like 5 total passes. Actually, kind of similar to how Jonathan Taylor ended the year just bowling people over, but had like 8 targets. Like, are we still going to see DJ Dallas or Travis Homer or whatever out there? Because that you cannot have a three-way split on a bad offense. Like, you're so dust if that happens.
I would bet that that is what happens. I think, like, this is Pete Carroll, right? So he's going to do something gross and suboptimal. The grossest thing he could do would be to use Travis Homer or DJ Dallas in a backfield with two excellent running backs outside of those guys. So I think he'll do that. Penny also does not profile as a receiver. As you mentioned, he wasn't really used to even last year when he was crushing. His prospect profile didn't show really any receiving promise. We obviously have major red flags with Kenneth Walker in his long-term receiving ability, but also, like, he's a rookie, pass protection, all that stuff. So
right. Yep.
I think neither of those guys is very likely to be out there on third downs. They're going to have probably a trusted guy like Homer or whatever instead. So yeah, I think, like, almost certainly we're talking about an early down split between Walker and Penny, which is going to be gross on a bad offensive line. I think though, like, I still am drafting some of these guys because it's like easy to imagine a path where they have like an absurd spike week in week 14, 15, 16, 17, I guess 14 doesn't matter, but you know, one of those final weeks where it like gets you an extra round or it wins you the whole thing. Like, because they're such explosive, talented players. So at the prices, I think you can mix them in. You can kind of just hope something breaks, right? Because at least you're betting on talent with both Walker and Penny.
Right. That, yeah. I mean, that does make sense. Like, and both of them are good. Yeah. Like, Penny, when he's been healthy, has been good. Walker, what was he, the 49th pick of the draft, had this crazy season at Michigan State in like a similar type of situation where his team was so bad at passing that all they could rely on to score points was right. Just having Kenneth Walker run down the hill. He did all right in that. I mean, the tricky part is you are having to select Kenneth Walker over Tony Pollard, you know, in the Miles Sanders range. I kind of like Damian Harris more. I kind of like Cordarrelle Patterson more, if you even need a running back. And then with Penny, I mean, he goes one spot ahead of Ramondre. So it's like, I'm just not taking him that much.
Both those guys will fall, though. We were in a draft last night where we took Pollard or something, and then Walker fell to us. And Penny, I've seen fall. So I, you know, because of how bad the situation's likely to be and how bad the team's likely to be, you have to keep price at the forefront of your mind. But when they fall, I do like scooping both guys.
Right. Okay. The Dolphins. Feels like if you had a really strong take on the Dolphins backfield that works out, you're really going to get paid because they should be good on offense this year. Right. I mean, Tyreek, yeah. Waddle, Gesicki, Cedric Wilson, you know, like, and they spend the money on Edmonds. They give Mostert the prove it deal. They bring Michelle in as the veteran guy. I mean, if one of these guys does take like a real lead on this offense, like it really does feel like a potential smash.
My take on this right now is that the backfield is mispriced, period. That's yeah. I think everybody's mispriced. Like, everybody's too cheap. Like, okay, Edmonds is not going to have a goal line role. He's Chase Edmonds. You put that in ink. But even without a goal line role, where he's going to be the lead back. I think very likely he'll be the lead back. He can catch passes. He's got a creative offensive former offensive coordinator, now head coach at McDaniel. I think that they, you know, are going to be run heavy. So
yeah, he's given a lot of lip service to wanting to run the ball a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's not just lip service, but like the offense this guy come from is the coaching tree. Like, you know, I think we should believe McDaniel when he's saying, you know, you got to zig to the run when everyone's passing. Like, he's going to run a lot. And I think also, like, Tua is kind of a Jimmy Garoppolo type, makes a ton of sense. I mean, he's very accurate. You know, I think he can make those over the middle throws. Like, this offense, I think in some ways will look a lot like the San Francisco offense. And that has been
nice every guy on the fucking team is a value yeah. at running back where they're drafted. Yeah,
exactly. So like, yeah, Edmonds isn't perfect. And Edmonds might not end up being the guy, but like, to me, the risk reward profile on him is awesome. But then you go down to Mostert. I mean, Mostert's basically free. And then you go to Michelle, who is free. So to me, it's like draft a Miami running back most of the time. Like there's just, I don't think there's really much downside to these guys. I sometimes will take Mostert and Michelle together.
Together.
I don't do that a ton, but I have done it, you know, a decent amount, because I think specifically there you're going, I know Chase Edmonds is not going to have the goal line role. So one of these guys is scoring touchdowns and maybe I get some, you know, rotational spike weeks out of him. So, but you know, so I'm not taking Edmonds with either of the other guys. That feels more like a handcuff and he's too expensive to do that. But
I'll, Mostert is my favorite of the group because he is, I mean, he's going to have like the big play upside, but I mean, the simplest thing is simply that he was brought in by the guy who used to coach him. I mean, that is like, it just feels like in football, we know so much that these guys just want to do that, that they just, you know, they want their guys. And it just feels like, you know, McDaniel is telling us, he's like, come on, this is your dude. Like, why? I don't know what, and I know his contract is not very good, but it also was not that long ago we were super hyped up about him, you know, because it was becoming clear Trey Sermon wasn't going to be a thing. He gets two carries for 20 yards, tears his ACL. Everyone played him in cash not that long ago, right? We all had him in cash games on DraftKings, you know, week one, and now no one wants him because he got hurt.
Yeah, and he's old, and he's like an old speed back coming off an injury. So that I get why people aren't psyched about it, but
right.
I completely agree with your point. I mean, he knows the offense. Like there's no doubt that he knows the offense. He's going to make the team. And I think he'll have a pretty big role for as long as he's healthy. I think he's the best price adjusted. You know, he's a little more expensive than Michelle, but barely. I like Mostert a lot.
Surprise me that much if Michelle didn't make the team over Gaskin. Like, it'd be a little surprising. I would, like, make Michelle the favorite to make the team, but it's like, at the end of the day, it's still Sony Michelle we're talking about. Like, he's
That's
fine.
Fair. Yeah, I have really no interest in Gaskin because Gaskin is not good at the goal line, right? He's like,
I mean, he's just like the most whatever player in the world.
He's like a worse Chase Edmonds.
Yeah.
So to me, he feels like a contingent play that Edmonds gets hurt or is just bad in this offense, which does not seem likely given how good he was on outside zone runs last year. So, I don't really have any interest in Gaskin because I'm kind of looking at, like, how do I capture the touchdowns in this half PPR format? And I think you could do so cheaply with Mostert or Michelle. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like last year, like if you just said like, I think the Tampa Bay backfield is mispriced and which I got half of the way there.
we tried, right? We did our best,
but you know, or like one that we were kind of on was the Bills, where it's like, I was just taking both Bills guys.
Sure. Yeah.
And not in the same drafts, but you know, in across my portfolio had a lot of Bills running back. Miami really jumps out as one of those where you should probably have a lot of Miami running back in your portfolio.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely think that is true. I mean, probably the most disgusting backfield and the reason no one wants to touch it, but the Texans don't have any running back going higher than running back 40. Marlon Mack goes 57. Rex Burkhead basically goes underdrafted and David Johnson is not on the team. Now the complicated part of the Texans is that, I mean, they could just bring Isaiah Crowell in the middle of the season, right? Like it doesn't matter to them. I mean, they were the David Coley didn't know Royce Freeman's name. He had just played like a bunch of snaps and someone asked him, he's like, I don't know who that is. I forgot his name. So, but I mean, and Davis Mills is a little bit better than we expected. And they do have that interesting week 17 game against the Jaguars, which is probably going to be a total who cares bowl. Right. So that's kind of what, and Rex Burkhead had 150-2 in week 16 last year. I mean, I'm not really taking any of these guys and my lean would be towards Pierce, but it really would not surprise me if Rex Burkhead gets the most touches in that backfield.
I've taken a little bit of Mac recently. Ben was talking up Mac and I haven't taken much Pierce. He feels like just kind of like a round or too expensive. One of those guys where it's like, there's enough guys around him that I just take. I'm also not really targeting that game, so I just haven't really found myself on Pierce, but it could really, yeah, that one could be anybody, but a backfield I'm like less excited to get pieces of, you know,
right.
A bad team. I also don't, we probably need to dig in a little bit more. Like Cully's gone, right? This is a Lovie Smith team. So I think it feels like.
Who knows what that even means? Who literally, who even knows what that means?
No one, I think, wants to put in the mental work to like figure out what this team is about, what they want to do. Like, we're all just like, I don't care. So that feels
except
like
for except a, for Brandon Cooks, people are still super bullish on Brandon Cooks. Like,
that's true.
Pat Mayo was making bets with Herzig that Cooks would outscore Gabe Davis.
Wow, I mean, that's one of those things where you have to put the like dollar per point type of bet, because the outcomes where Davis outscores Cooks are sometimes by a lot,
by like 150 points. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I mean, it does feel like maybe like a collective leak from the fantasy community.
I mean, Marlon Mack could get 210 carries this year and he's getting running back 57.
Yeah. Like we all did. No one wants to think about the Texans. So like maybe
I don't want to think about it. This is the first mental energy I've expended thinking about the Texans outside of like when you take a Jaguar and you just need a bring back. That's the only time I think about the Texans at all.
Like, I've not seen anyone go. And I have thought about doing this and then was like, I'm not doing that. Like, go and look at Lovie Smith's like previous like running back splits. Like, who is the Texans offensive coordinator?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea.
No clue.
I should know who their offensive coordinator is.
Let's guess. Let's just guess. Has the Texans offensive coordinator
say Freddie Kitchens
had an NFL job before? Let's just guess this. Have they had an NFL job before? I'm going to say yes.
Yes. Oh yeah, definitely.
Tim Kelly. No, he's the passing game coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. I literally can't even find this. Texans.
Wait. Google who the Texans OC was and got the wrong.
And it
name.
Told me, it told me the old one. It told me their old one. The Texans offensive. Oh, Pep Hamilton. Okay.
So okay. Perfect.
He's had a million NFL jobs. Sure.
Yeah. Pep Hamilton's like the perfect retread for a Lovie Smith team.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Pep Hamilton, he was the Colts guy. Someone's got to get, don't want to do this. Someone look up Pep Hamilton's running back splits.
All right. I can do this. This is easy. So he was the
workhorse guy.
So he was the offensive coordinator 2013, 2014, 2015. He was the head coach of an XFL team. He was an assistant coach at Michigan. So I'm going to go with the Indianapolis Colts teams. This was an Andrew Luck year, and this was a two-way split between Trent Richardson and Donald Brown. Ahmad Bradshaw got 41 carries, and Vic Ballard and Tashard Choice were also lightly involved in this backfield. The next season, 2014, this was another Andrew Luck year. Trent Richardson, 160 carries, Ahmad Bradshaw, 90. Dan Heron, who honest to God, I don't know who that is, 78. And Zerlin Tipton had 10. Carries. So we are looking at
how many carries did Richardson get?
160.
One. Okay.
And then 2014 was the Andrew Luck injury year where Matt Hasselbeck started 8 games and Frank Gore had 260 carries on this team. I had completely forgotten this season even happened. The Frank Gore on the Colts era. Completely forgotten that happened.
I mean, the Matt Hasselbeck threw me too. I was like, I barely remember.
Football's so fucking strange. Like, how is Frank Gore this involved?
It does feel like he would give Marlon Mack a big role, right?
If this guy gave Frank Gore 260 carries when he didn't see anyone else behind him,
Trent Richardson being propped up when he's clearly terrible.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Yeah.
Hmm. It also just doesn't sound appealing. It's like, remember Pep Hamilton? He was with Luck in Stanford, right?
I want to say that's true.
I remember we were all mad because it felt like he was holding Luck back.
So he was the offensive coordinator at 2011 and 2012 in Stanford, and Andrew Luck was drafted in. Yeah, so he would have came over with Luck.
Yeah. Okay. So I remember at some point being like, I think Luck is even better than we thought because he succeeded with Pep Hamilton at Stanford. Like, this is anyway, I don't think Pep Hamilton's not making me feel better about the Texans, man.
Yeah. No. Just like going through his resume was not helping me feel good. Okay. Let's see. There was one other. Oh, the Bills. I mean, James Cook, Devin Singletary, literally going back to back, running back 33, running back 44. I just don't know how you can take yourself seriously and not be smashing Singletary right now. I mean, he did the same thing Penny did to end the year, and he's on maybe the best offense in football. And I think it's really unlikely that they turn over, like it's a 50-50 with him and Cook right away.
Yeah, I would push back pretty strongly on he did the same thing as Penny, because Penny was like a revelation. And
but Singletary was just
got a lot of snaps.
He was just playing every, yeah. I mean, he was, but to end the year, from week 14 on, he played 93% of the snaps. He played 68% in a big win against New England. He had 6 targets in that game. 80% of the snaps against Atlanta with 23 carries, 110 yards, 2 touchdowns. 76% the final year or final week against the Jets, 19 for 88 in a touchdown. Then he played 86% of the snaps against New England in that blowout playoff win. And then he played every snap in the Chiefs game.
That is pretty wild. 100% of snaps.
You don't see that often.
Mm-mm. No, you really don't. And that's something that, you know, I think is quite bullish that they were there. I mean, I'm using that to talk up Saquon. You know, it's like, hey, Daboll
right.
played Singletary 100% of
snaps. But he also brought Matt Breida over with him.
That's true. But Matt Breida was on that team that, you know, he didn't get a snap.
Right.
So, but yeah, I am drafting Singletary a lot. Sean Siegel loves Singletary. He's drafting him every team. So, you know, I agree, but I do, I still think the answer to this backfield is probably yes. Like, I think Cook, if you can, especially if you can get him a little bit after where he's
going. Especially because they, like, in seasons where Gabe Davis is not who we think he is, like, they're just going to need more guys to absorb the touches, because I don't think Isaiah McKenzie and Jamison Crowder can handle, like, 120 combined touches, probably.
Yeah, I also do think that this team is probably likely to be a bit more frustrating than they've been over the last couple seasons. From like a pass run split perspective. The reason I say that is that I was reading an article in The Athletic where they were talking about how McDermott has sometimes been clearly frustrated with just how pass heavy Daboll was at times.
Right.
And like, they really didn't have like a counterpunch. Like, it was just like, the answer was always to pass more, which is, you know, why I love Daboll so much. But
right.
But now with the new OC, like, you've got a guy who's, you know, Josh Allen went to bat for, really wanted him, but Dorsey's still like a younger dude, you know, inexperienced guy. Like, he probably, McDermott basically is probably gonna have his fingerprints a little bit more on the offense than he has in years past. So generally that's not great probably, but it might mean a bit more rushing and a more value in this backfield. Cause one of the things with the Bills backfield over the last couple seasons, one of the reasons that people weren't that excited to draft Singletary Moss last
Josh
year.
Josh Allen just taking all the touchdowns.
He takes all the touchdowns. And there's like not, there's just not that much value in the backfield. So you have to have a guy take 100% of the snaps before he becomes like, I mean, Singletary is like a low end RB1 with 100% snap rate. Like, that's a low value backfield. So I actually do wonder if maybe there's a bit more value in the backfield than there was under Daboll.
I like that. I like getting into the psychology of, you know, of the head coach, of like, this guy's more likely to just like do what the head coach wants to, 'cause he's new to having this job. I like that angle. That's why you looked into your crystal ball.
Well, I also am, in this article, they're saying that they expect McDermott to have more of an input. So,
yeah. I mean, it's just like, I also didn't love Cook as a prospect. Like I didn't think I also didn't think an NFL team would fall in love with him the way that the Bills clearly like do value him. Like it seems like they liked him much more than us dynasty nerds did.
Yeah. I guess cause he's kind of like someone, he seems like reliable, you know, like you can kind of use him. He can kind of use him as a lead back, but he's undersized, he was pretty good in terms of a pass catcher, but not like one of these guys who profiles as potentially elite.
Right. All right. So that's the Bills. I guess the Washington football team is also pretty up in the air because they're talking about using three guys. Liam was making the point to me that he thinks that Wentz is just so dust, he can't even hit checkdowns. So McKissick is dust. Like that was why Hines was not nearly as good or as explosive last season. I do wonder if it is setting up for like all time FUD, and then Antonio Gibson gets 290 touches and just ends up being a mega smash. Like, cause Gibson is the profile of guy we like. Like he caught a ton of passes in college. He's super explosive. He's been explosive in the NFL. Just it has never made sense for them to turn him into the Peyton Barber of that offense. Like it's so bizarre.
It is really weird, but I don't have a ton of Gibson.
Probably doesn't change. Yeah.
Yeah. Gibson is someone I really struggle with, because if it was a little cheaper, I'd probably be drafting a lot of them.
Yeah.
But I'm not really drafting any of them at his current price. But maybe that's bad because, I mean, their offensive line's okay. You know, I don't think that much of Brian Robinson. Like, I'm not afraid of Brian Robinson, but I am letting the fact
Brian Robinson won't play so well that he, like, has to be on the field. It would just be the coaches being stubborn.
Exactly. So, but at the same time, like, the fact that they're talking about playing Brian Robinson does concern me enough, or at least I'm letting that affect my decisions when I'm not drafting Gibson a little bit, because I'm like, oh, he's boxed out in two directions, which I hate. But
yeah,
I don't know, he's a guy that I've been trying to think, like, I probably need to get some Gibson, especially like be cognizant of like, hey, Gibson's fallen in this draft, maybe scoop him, maybe get Gibson at some good prices just to make sure I'm not totally out, because yeah, he's a fine NFL running back and he's not super expensive.
I would put him in that bucket of like not guys that I'm like totally do not draft, but just I'm not drafting at cost. Like when he falls a good bit, then I'm in on. I mean, I was taking Brian Robinson a lot early on, just because he was one of those guys who was in. I mean, he was super cheap, and the coaching staff was already talking him up. I guess Philadelphia is technically another one. I mean, Miles Sanders doesn't go off until the back end of the seventh round. He famously scored no touchdowns last season. We got Gainwell there. You know, I don't know. I guess if Jordan Howard is not involved at all, maybe Gainwell and Sanders can both pay off.
Yeah. They keep saying Jordan Howard's not signed yet. Like
it's a real Jerick McKinnon situation.
It does feel Jerick McKinnon-y. I've been kind of in on Sanders. Like, to me, there's a couple reasons I like Sanders. One, he's like cheaper than Gibson. So we were in an FFPC draft on Ship Chasing, and Gibson was available. We had, I think, Hurts, and I was like, oh, let's take Sanders, but Gibson was also available, and everyone like was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Why would we take with Miles Sanders when Antonio Gibson's available? To me, I'm like, aren't they kind of like the same exact
very similar? Yeah.
So, I mean, and looking at the stats last year, Miles Sanders was actually pretty solid in rush yards over expected per attempt. He just didn't score any touchdowns. So, I don't know. If you're excited about Hurts, which I am.
I'm excited about all of them, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like he was running back 11, Miles Sanders, in rush yards over expected per attempt. And so, okay, that makes me feel like maybe we get kind of a J.K. Dobbins, Lamar Jackson type of thing out of the Eagles, right? Like if if we have this offense that's taken a step forward with Hurts as a passer, but they're still using him a lot as a rusher, a breakaway running back, which Sanders is, that's kind of his archetype. He's like, right, a big play guy who was efficient last season, is pretty interesting to me at this price. So he's a guy, I don't have a ton of Sanders, but he's a lot easier for me to click than Gibson, mostly because Gibson's gone like 14 picks by the time I'm taking Sanders.
Yeah, I think that seems fine. I mean, I'm not running to the clock to pick him. Especially, honestly, I would just rather take Pollard. I truly would.
Yeah, I tend to. One thing I'll do is if I have like a hero running back build, or definitely if I've got two by that point, I'm taking Pollard because I want the big swing. I want the like true league winner. But zero running back builds, I mean, Sanders, if you're doing zero running back and you're getting Miles Sanders, like, you know, eighth round or whatever, like that's pretty nice. That's a lead running back.
Yeah. Yeah. He will be of that. You know, he'll do enough some weeks to, you know, he'll just give you 12 points enough times to help you stay alive while you're waiting for Tyrion Davis Price to hit or whatever.
Yeah. And this is weird because of last year, but like he has touchdown upside. They scored a lot of touchdowns on the ground after Sanders was hurt.
If they just stopped giving the ball to Kenny Gainwell, who I like remember being like, it's so funny. I just remember Gainwell being at, like totally out of the rotation and then going to go look at his Pro Football Reference page and seeing that he scored the same amount of touchdowns as Jordan Howard was like bewildering.
Yeah, because I think that's like my impression too, but it feels like because the weeks we wanted it to happen, it didn't happen.
There was like a week he was like a play on DraftKings and he like literally didn't get a touch.
Okay. Yeah, that'll stick in your brain, man.
Yeah.
That'll skew things.
Yeah. Yeah, it will. I think that's it. I mean, maybe the 49ers.
No, I mean, we got San Francisco, man.
Yeah. Yeah. The 49ers. I mean, I think it big time is pending, like how healthy Jeff Wilson Jr. is. Cause he kind of has the same thing as, what's his name, as Jerick McKinnon, where it was like, he was in the rotation and then he was out of the rotation cause he couldn't move.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, they'll probably play him if he can get out there, but how often is he even going to be able to get out there?
Tyrion Davis Price is someone like I've had to, that was when I had to do a little sit down with myself on
the
opposite direction.
No, just keep taking him, dude.
Am I really hammering this guy? I mean,
yes.
Did you like him as a prospect before he went to San Francisco?
But it's running back. It doesn't matter at this price. It literally doesn't matter.
You can get Jeff Wilson in the last round of every single
Jeff
one
Wilson
of these.
Take Jeff Wilson too.
Yeah,
But Tyrion Davis Price is the, like the coaches seem more excited about him. Jeff Wilson Jr. is just there.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we have had a lot of examples of the San Francisco running back they draft doing like nothing. We got Elijah Mitchell last year. We also obviously had Trey Sermon. So even last year, give us an example.
Right, but Trey Sermon is like the exact same thing as Tyrion Davis Price. They were selected with like the same pick.
I know, but like it really shouldn't surprise us if it's like, oh, it ended up being Jeff Wilson.
Yeah, but that's fine at Tyrion Davis Price's cost. It's not fine at Trey Sermon's price last year.
Well, yeah, for sure. Are you in on Mitchell? He's someone I take.
I had to have a sit down with myself of like, you can't just keep taking Eli Mitchell because it's an unbalanced portfolio to have like 50% of your teams having a San Francisco running back on them when, you know, but I do really like Eli Mitchell. Like Eli Mitchell's range is way better than Josh Jacobs or Antonio Gibson or AJ Dillon. Other than if Aaron Jones gets injured.
Yeah, I'm not sure about AJ Dillon there because, yeah, the contingent value is so nice, but definitely with the other guys. Yeah, I like Mitchell too. This is one where I feel like maybe the backfield, it's not quite as egregious because Mitchell's not super cheap, but
you could take both.
Trey Lance could really unlock things from, you know, a rushing efficiency perspective.
Yeah.
Right? Like, again, kind of the Baltimore thing, like true dual threat quarterback who, I mean, he could be awesome on the ground. Like, and we know that they're going to lean into that from what we saw last year. Like they're going to lean into it. They're going to build their offense around Trey Trey Lance's rushing ability. So if there was like a pass catcher here, I probably wouldn't be as excited, but none of these guys really profile that way. It's basically like speed two down guy in Mitchell or big two down guy in Tyrion Davis Price or Jeff Mitchell. So I think all of them are really good picks. I don't mind being overweight on the backfield at all.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, well, that's probably just like a good rule for living is it's just like get overweight on 49ers running backs every single year.
Every year.
Because even like, I guess Eli kills you if he misses the playoffs, but if he misses, I don't know, or if he just is not the lead back for like four games in the middle of the season, it's probably still fine for what he costs.
San Francisco is so weird because they tend to be a committee, but like they're a committee who has like high weekly upside.
Exactly.
Like one guy will capture a lot of the backfield that week, but then
it'll be different the next week. Yeah.
And I don't know if that's like just the way it's happened, you know, like how much of that is randomness.
Yeah, descriptive rather than how they'd actually like it to go.
Yeah. But it is appealing. Like when I think about just like my memory of San Francisco, it's like, I mean, Jeff Wilson, remember, I think it was 2019, just like, or maybe it was 2020.
Yeah, he scored 5 touchdowns the first 2 weeks of the season.
I was actually talking about the end of the season. He was like a waiver wire pick.
Oh, I don't even remember. I don't even remember that.
He just like crushed the fantasy playoffs 1 year.
I mean, the easiest way to explain this backfield is that every year that Kyle Shanahan has been the coach of the 49ers, they've had a different leading rusher all 5 years. Every year it's been someone different.
Yeah, but I think to me, it's like if that's going to provide a discount on Mitchell, take it. You know, I think he's already a pretty good price. People are starting to worry that.
Well, yeah. So if Eli Mitchell had his stats from last year and was like a Raider or a Bear or a Buccaneer, whatever, he'd be a third round pick.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because also he's athletic. He's really fast.
Oh, super athletic. Yeah. Yeah, how funny would it be if Trey Sermon comes back? How fun, like it would be so goddamn funny if Trey Sermon was like 800 yards, 6 touchdowns for the 49ers this year.
Yeah, there's like certain outcomes, right, that just like gut you for that season. And I realized I wasn't taking enough Mecole Hardman because I was like, I don't want to be the 2022 gutting outcome to be Mecole Hardman was good after all.
Yeah,
like, I've got to really have don't. Some. Yeah. But Trey Sermon was good after all is like very much an outcome that I am very exposed on. Like if he's good, it's going to be a bad 2022 for me.
I mean, we just got to take him a little bit in the main event. We just got
to
take him with some eighth round picks 18th round picks in the main event and just hold him. And, you know, like that's fine.
Yeah, I'm not. Are you taking him in best ball right now?
No,
I can't get there.
No, maybe in 20 rounders. Maybe I'll start taking him a little bit because it gets truly desperate at the end of these 20 round drafts. I mean, you're already on underdog in the 18th round. Like, shit, I guess I'll take Austin Hooper. So adding another 2 rounds onto that makes it really tough.
Austin Hooper, again, if Austin Hooper is the guy you need this year, better luck next year for me.
I'll actually be okay because I draft so many Dallas players. That I always and if you miss on Burks and Woods, you're dead. You're dead. No, to you Austin got Hooper.
Westbrook Akine.
Now I'm not taking him. I would rather take. I would have taken him. I would rather take Hooper than Akine because at least his 2 catches for 20 yards and a touchdown count in my tight end spot and not my wide receiver spot.
Well, I'm counting on Akine to be playing 100% of the snaps with Treylon Burks sucking air on the bench. You know.
Correct. Yeah. Poor guy. Poor guy can't beat his asthma.
It's terrible to see him bust so quickly.
Yeah. But it hasn't really impacted his ADP the way that Jamar Chase like can't catch the ball stuff has. He's still going in the same range.
We need the asthma reports in August because that will tank his ADP.
We need him missing a preseason game because of asthma.
Oh man.
He'll fall 15, 20 picks.
He'll fall to the 15th round.
Yeah.
If he misses a preseason game because of asthma, I mean, people will panic.
Yeah. Buddy. I'm like manifesting this. I'm literally manifesting this right now.
And that, I'm actually not because I would have so much Traylon. I mean, I would literally just have him in every single draft at a fifth, you know, even a 12th round price.
If he, I mean, even a 10th rounder, if it's Russell Gage or Traylon Burks, like I know who I'm taking, you know,
that's a philosophical,
it is that that's it's not even that not even that taking Burks is the right decision there, but just philosophically, like but Hayden did this great article where he showed like he could profile drafters where he's like, once you start your draft this way, you're a fucking ship chaser and you take the exact same type of people. Or if you start your draft this way, you're a dusty old best player available drafter and you always take these guys. Like you and I are taking Drake London and Traylon Burks and the boomers are taking Adam Thielen and we never intersect. We are never taking the other guy.
Yeah. So it's interesting with Pete was saying sometimes he'll like let God take the wheel with his first couple of rounds and just like, you know, basically let the room decide and take whoever the ADP value is and then build his like normal team from there, which I think is a good way to get around that type of thing. And then I've like in the puppy, I was taking Derrick Henry with kind of a similar thing of like,
yeah,
I'm going to build ship chasing teams, but with Derrick Henry or like I, in a DraftKings team, somehow out of the 12 hole, I got Eckler and Henry. So I'm like, all right, I'll build now, like from this point on, like very much a ship chasing team.
Yeah.
But with Eckler and Henry, like that's going to be incredibly unique. So yeah, it is probably, that's probably something in like 2025, we're going to have to clean up of like knowing that like these structures are likely to have very
the same
similar
players.
Yeah. Yeah. Which isn't good. Like you don't, like it would be, like a Thielen probably has more value to us than to a dusty drafter because of the ownership basically. Right?
Yeah, like, right. Exactly. Leverage. Yeah. Because of how much you're overlapping versus like similar opponents basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Leverage is probably like, that's the next, I wonder if we're going to put it down for 2023. You're going to hear leverage. In
you think leverage is going to be the week 17 thing?
I'll bet it
doesn't get that deep. I'll bet combos is the next thing.
I bet it's like,
you know, when you take Travis Kelce at 10, you can't even take Mixon when he falls because that is going to be a combo that presents itself a lot. You actually should take Saquon six spots ahead of ADP or whatever, because it's the range of outcomes are similar, but it's a less duplicated combination.
The leverage on this combo is so much better, dude.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, honestly, and I hope that like some of the tools that are getting built, like Bind Force stuff over at Spike Week and everything, like I hope that kind of contributes to the conversation because we need a new thing. Like we're going to do the week 17 thing to death this offseason. Yeah. We are going to need a new thing next year.
Yeah. It took us 3 weeks to murder week 17 conversations. That was it.
It took me like 4 days. It took me like 4 days. And then Josh Norris was like, I'm literally kicking you off this live stream. Like you can't be here anymore.
Well, wait until he hears about leverage of the combos.
When I'm explaining like, oh, I can't take Wandale here because Wandale overlaps with like similar drafters to me and I have to take Sterling Shepard. He's going to be like, that's it, dude. Fantasy football has gone too far. We need to do something else. We need a new activity. God. Yeah. All right. Let's get out of here. What do we have coming up on a good football show and on NBC Sports Edge this week?
So good football show. We are recording in like an hour and a half and Kyle and I are going to be drafting against each other in an underdog draft.
I should have Kyle come on this show. I've been meaning to do that.
He's got some good best ball thoughts.
Yeah. I got that as a promise, guys. Kyle will be on the show next week if he's got time for me.
So check that out. We're going to be doing a little best ball and then discussing as we go. Matt Straub hosting that one. Check out our team preview series, which I just had the Bengals one on. I talked myself into Zach Taylor not being a total donkey, which is probably going to.
I don't know. I don't know if I can abide by this.
I think maybe he was trying to protect Joe Burrow, keep him alive. They were a little less donkey-ish in the playoffs.
I had a really galaxy brain thought this morning when I was doing my underdog cardio club, which is that I think Joe Burrow is just Kirk Cousins, but he had some success early in his career. I am wanting to get against the Bengals and the markets big time.
I think maybe you're burning yourself out a little.
Well,
too
he's got there. Well, he's got great wide receivers, right? Like he's got Jamar Chase and T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd and a good running back. Like,
he led the league in completion percentage over expected last year.
He is not even to me in the same conversation as Mahomes, Herbert, and Josh Allen. But he is frequently put in that tier of guys.
I think he should be. I mean, Mahomes to me is like Mahomes and Allen are kind of like their own.
They're in their own thing. And yeah. I lose my mind when people are like, I'd rather have Justin Herbert than Patrick Mahomes. Like, why doesn't he start a home playoff game and then we can start having these conversations?
Yeah. Herbert's good, but you know, come on. But I think Burrow belongs in. I would rather have Herbert, but I think he's kind of in the general vicinity of a Herbert. I don't think that's like a huge tier break.
Okay. That's fine.
He takes a lot of sacks. He takes a ton of sacks, but you know, maybe with this better offensive line, like their offensive line was really, really bad.
So bad
2 years ago. And it was bad last year. It was still really bad last year. So looking at their offensive line projection for this year, like it's possible the line is a strength. So
right.
I don't know, man. Like I think we could, the Burrow is Cousins take might look pretty. I would be careful.
No one clip that. No one clip it.
Be careful.
It's just, I just feel Mahomes is getting so much disrespect this offseason, and everyone just wants to big up Josh Allen and Justin Herbert and Burrow. And I just am, I'm sick of it.
Mahomes being this cheap is going to be like just a complete aberration, right? Like
it'll never be... not only Mahomes, but just like when will the Chiefs wide receiver one be going in the fifth round? When will that ever? It'll probably never happen again for as long as Mahomes is.
No, when MVS is going much later than the fifth.
You're an MVS guy, huh?
I'm just an anti-Juju guy. I actually drafted a fair amount of Juju, but I hate it.
Scott Barrett DM'd me that last night. We were in a best ball mania together, and he DM'd me when I took Sky, and he was like, "You took Sky ahead of the Chiefs wide receiver one."
I've got to pump MVS here because I got to get some. Got to get some cheap Sky. This expensive Sky is out of control.
Sky is getting cheaper. It had gotten a little bit out of control. All right, let's get out of here.
All right.
Everyone, good football show. NBC Sports Edge. I'll be back next week.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.